Are you free for lunch?
I've got to be in court at 3, but I think I could swing it. How's Rey Muerto sound?
Sounds great.
Good, I'll see you at 1.
See you at 1.
Lawrence tapped the button to break the link. The patio of Rey Muerto got enough sunlight to be bright, not enough to be blinding. From across the street, Lawrence watched his friend take their usual table and lean back with the menu. He slid in through the fire gate and dropped into the chair across from him. Marty leaped up.
Son of a whore!
Calm down, said Lawrence.
His friend looked around at the other patio diners and took in a deep breath.
Marty, calm down, for Pete's sake. It's me.
He reached up and slid the glasses away from his eyes. He froze.
Lawrence?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet Allah, said Marty. What the hell?
Will you sit down?
Are you, I mean, you're not going to bite me or anything, are you?
Sit down.
He sat down.
What happened?
Car crash. I tried to beat the green line and lost.
Shit.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And now you're dead?
Yep.
Shit.
The waitress approached and he pushed the sunglasses back up.
What can I get you two gentlemen?
I'd like the cold roast beef sandwich, said Lawrence. No lettuce, no tomato, heavy on the beef, as rare as you can cut it.
She gave him a look but shifted her attention to Marty.
And you?
Vodka martini, he whispered. Make it a double. Two doubles, in fact.
And to eat?
Another martini.
She walked away with a last glance at Lawrence. Marty drummed his fingers on the tabletop and looked anywhere but at his friend.
Why did you call me?
I need some help.
No, seriously.
He glanced around.
Why did you call me? Do you know what it could do to me if I'm seen with you?
Marty, I am screwed right now, okay? I've got no home, no job, nothing.
Of course you don't. You're an ex.
I'm an ex, but I'm not like them,
he said.
Look, we're just talking. No biting. No ripping.
The other man shuffled back.
Will you stop acting like I'm a leper?
You're worse than a leper. Lepers are still alive.
That's just stupid. You used to say that all the time.
Yeah, but I didn't mean it for people like me.
He leaned back and twisted his foot back and forth. His ankles ached. The waitress set two martinis down on the table. Marty grabbed one and downed it.
What the hell were you thinking, coming back like this?
You think this was a choice?
Well, no, but can't you just kill yourself or re-kill yourself or something?
Jesus, Marty. I could use a little more support right now.
What do you want from me?
I want you to calm down, for starters.
Calm down? You're an ex, you idiot!
He hissed.
If the partners found out I was talking to you, they'd throw me out.
They can't throw you out for talking to me.
You're an ex. For all they know, I'm collaborating with you.
Collaborating?
He tried to laugh, but there wasn't enough air in his lungs.
Look, just tell me what you want.
What do you think? I want Kimberly out of my house and me back in. I want my job back.
You lost your job?
Of course I did, he snapped. Look at me. Why would they keep me on staff?
See?
Marty stabbed his finger down and the bread plate clattered.
You know it yourself. That's why I can't be talking to you.
So you're just going to bail on me?
Just like you would on me, yeah.
He thumbed through his wallet.
Look,
there's this guy in North Park named Wells. He's some sort of zombie rights nut, does a lot of pro bono work. A card flew down and clicked on the table.
Marty,
I have a family. Did you think of them? Do you know what would happen to them if the authorities thought we carried the X virus, that we've been hanging out with one every weekend for Allah knows how long?
Just explain it to them. They'll understand.
How much brain did you lose? You know what'll happen. Hell, you campaigned for half those laws. No job, no outside contact. Nobody would hear from us for years at best. Probably never again.
He stood up, dug through his wallet a bit more, and threw a wad of bills down on the table.
That's around 600,
he said. It's the most I can do, and you didn't get it from me. Don't call me again.
I won't.
His friend marched into the restaurant, reappeared on the sidewalk, and vanished down the road. Lawrence watched for a moment, reached down to rub his calves, and a roast beef sandwich inched into view. The waitress was holding the plate at arm's length. A large busboy stood behind her. Half the patio diners had vanished inside.
"Oh, just give me the damned sandwich," he sighed.
Lawrence marched away from Rey Muerto with a small moral victory, no friends, and a fluttering hunger. The sandwich had smelled okay, but his stomach was churning. The roast beef had not been rare enough,
and his legs were in agony.
He sat on the concrete wall next to his shoes and socks and watched sheets of water cascade down. The big fountain dominated the plaza between the two museums. At night, the lights filled it with color, but right now it was just curtains of silver reflecting the blue sky. He could almost feel the cool liquid on his feet. They looked white underwater. The sterile-wrapped scalpel was still in his coat pocket. He pulled it out and tapped it against his knees, then his knuckles. Two little tabs made it easy to tear the paper away. Clenching the scalpel between his teeth, he dragged his ankle up onto the opposite knee. The veins were thick and black against his pale skin. He poked at his Achilles tendon. It was getting stiff and hard. He balanced the blade in his fingers. It felt warm against the flesh of his ankle. He gritted his teeth and pushed down. There was no pain, and the resistant meat reminded him of carving a Christmas ham. He worked the scalpel deeper until the plastic handle touched his skin, then dragged it up his calf. Dark blood welled up, and he swung his leg into the fountain. He watched the water cloud as he lifted his other ankle and sliced through the flesh. His cuffs were getting bloody, so he pulled them up and bunched them above his knees. The dull pain flowed out of him, and he relaxed.
"What you doing?"
He turned and saw the girl. She was 5 at the most, wearing a bright red Mighty Dragon shirt. She leaned over the edge of the fountain and looked at the clouds of dark blood.
"You made the water dirty."
"I did," he smiled. "I'm sorry."
"Why?"
"I was trying to fix my legs."
"Why?"
"So they wouldn't hurt."
"Why?"
He thought for a moment and fell back on the oldest of infections.
"I've got cooties," he explained, "and it makes my legs hurt."
"Ew,"
grinned the girl.
"Cooties,"
he nodded.
"Misha says cooties are forever."
"They are."
"No,"
she said with a sage shake of her head.
"Daddy says Misha's wrong. They can cure cooties now."
He laughed. The air scraped his windpipe and it came out like a bark. The girl jumped and squealed.
"Letty,"
called a woman across the plaza. She took a few strides towards the fountain.
"Stop bothering that man." "It's okay,"
she yelled back.
"He has cooties, but his legs don't hurt no more."
His laugh grated the air again.
"You are so cute," he said with a grin. "I could just eat you up."
The mother looked at him in horror. His heart sank. He put his hands up.
"It's just a figure of..."
"X! X in the park!"
She yanked the little girl into her arms and the child began to cry.
"Somebody help!"
"Lady, it's okay," he said, standing up. "Honest, I just mean she's a really adorable..."
"Get away from my baby, you monster!"
A few other people wandered closer, fingers pointed, people gasped.
"Did it bite that kid?" "Jesus, look at all the blood! Somebody call the cops!" "People, please!" he shouted. "This is all drawers!"
His air ran out, and the words faded into a throaty moan. He stumbled over the fountain's edge, back onto the cobblestones.
"It's attacking!"
"The head, we have to smash its head! Is the little girl okay?"
"Oh, God, there's so much blood!"
A police car buzzed up over the stairs and skidded to a halt. Two officers, a man with a thick mustache and a burly woman, leaped out with stun batons ready.
"Mother of God," said the man. "A new one'd get loose someday."
Lawrence tried to talk, coughed, and remembered to suck in another lung full of air.
"Everyone stand back,"
shouted the female officer.
"It tried to eat my little girl,"
screamed the mother.
"She's been bit,"
yelled someone else.
"She's bleeding bad."
"It's my blood,"
he shouted.
"There's
yelling used up his air faster than he thought. He took another breath, and they hit him with the batons. The cobblestones rushed up to smack his shoulder. The policeman kneeled on his back.
Get the muzzle around its head.
I'm not an it.
Hold it still,
she yelled. The plastic straps cinched down across his nose and cheeks, and a steel rod the width of a finger slipped between his teeth. Another set of bands pulled tight under his jaw and across the top of his head.
What the fuck is wrong with you people?
He bellowed around the bit. Nicholas Wells looked like every other lawyer Lawrence knew. Dark suit, perfect hair, and a trustworthy, pasted-on smile. His bland features could have been anywhere between 30 and 50. There were a dozen photos of him around the office with a dozen different public figures. He looked the same in every one. Wells leaned back in the chair.
The police say you had my card in your pocket?
Lawrence nodded.
And you're a 17. You can talk.
He drummed his fingers on the chair arm and pointed at the bit in his mouth.
Oh, sorry, just too used to seeing those on.
Wells reached into a drawer and slid a pair of scissors across the desk to the dead man. Lawrence forced the plastic strap between the blades and levered them shut. The muzzle came apart with a bang, and he spit the steel rod out.
Thanks, he said. Again, sorry about that. You want a drink or anything?
I don't think I can anymore, but thanks.
Actually, the high-proof rums and vodkas are great for you, said the lawyer. Sterilize your insides.
Really?
Really.
I'll have a double then, thank you.
There's also some hamburger in the mini-fridge, if you want it. Vat meat, but it does the job.
Lawrence's eyes flicked to the white box, but he stayed in his seat.
You're not my first dead client, Mr. Secord.
Wells handed him a glass.
I'm guessing the past 2 days haven't been that great for you.
Not really, no.
The lawyer sat down on the edge of his desk.
Have some meat. You'll feel better, and it'll be easier for you to focus while we talk.
He got up and made it to the fridge without stumbling. His tongue trembled as he unwrapped the ground chuck. It tasted like heaven. He couldn't remember any meal ever tasting so delicious.
Good?
God, yes,
he said between bites.
Thank you.
No problem.
He gestured at the chair with his own glass, and Lawrence sat back down.
So, what can I do for you?
I want my life back.
Wells smiled.
I think you need to be in a church to make that request.
No, I know that. I'm dead. I understand. It's just, a few days ago I had a home. I had a job. And now it's all been taken away, and people are looking at me. People I thought I knew, and they're...
He settled back in the chair.
They treat me like a monster.
I know, said the lawyer. People look at you, and they just see an X. They don't care that you can control your appetite. They don't care that you want to be left alone. They just see a flesh-eating monster that wants to swallow their children.
Exactly,
nodded Lawrence.
But that's not who I am.
But it's what you look like.
Yeah, but that's profiling, isn't it?
It is. But what are they supposed to do? Assume that little old lady might try to gnaw someone's face off and slap a muzzle on her? That's counterproductive, and you know it. It's not fair, but that's how it goes.
He shrugged.
I could help you get a job doing construction, if you want, maybe janitorial work. There are a couple pro-X companies here in the city.
I've been in finance for 20 years. I'm a portfolio specialist for investors.
Who got fired this morning, yes? People get nervous seeing someone like you behind a desk, or working in the food industry. They want to see you doing harmless work in a muzzle.
You have to be joking.
Wells shook his head.
You'd only have to wear it during work hours. There are models with buckles. You could take it off back at the shelter.
I don't want to go to a shelter. I want to go home.
You don't have a home.
I do. It's a mile and a half that way. We could go look in the window and watch the pool boy bang my wife.
Wells sighed and set his glass down.
Mr. Secord,
Lawrence,
you have to accept this. You don't have a home. You don't have a wife. You're lucky they're not deporting you.
How can they deport me? I'm an American. Are they sending me back to Connecticut?
You aren't an American anymore. That's what you need to understand. The moment you died, your citizenship was declared null and void under the Expatriate Act of 2057. You can't own property or hold currency. You have no legal rights under the law as it currently stands. Technically, I'm not even supposed to talk to you.
He shook his head.
This is just... It has to be illegal. I'm an American. A taxpayer. People can't just walk in and take everything I own.
You were an American. You were a taxpayer, and you lost ownership of everything the moment that bus hit your Tesla.
There has to be something I can do.
Wells sighed and stood up. I'm sorry. But at this point in time, there isn't.
Lawrence glared up at the bronze heroes glimmering in the moonlight and wished he was dead. For real. If they'd done their jobs right, he would be. They had a job again. In 3 days, he started hauling press board at a lot near Old Town. They were willing to pay him $3 an hour. Wells had arranged a bunk at an ex-shelter where he could get vat meat and a place to lay down. A rustle echoed across the nighttime park. The same ex he'd seen there before. The dead woman. It tilted its head and stared past him with the empty eye socket. Then it shuffled away. The ex's legs were swollen and fat with rotted blood. It was no wonder she shuffled. He took a few steps and pulled the scalpel from his pocket. One hand went against her knee. The blade sank into the bloated flesh, and he dragged it down to her heel. Blood oozed out like pudding to splatter on the grass. He cut the other ankle and more black clumps ran from the ex's skin. Its expression never changed, but he was sure it moved a little easier and lifted its feet a little higher as it stumbled away, closer to a walk than a stagger.
"That was nice of you,"
someone said. He leaped to his feet, arms up. It was a pretty blonde, her hair tied up almost in a topknot. She smiled at him over her owlish glasses.
"I'm not going to hurt you,"
she said.
"I remember you,"
he said.
"You were at the hospital."
She nodded.
"I saved you from the incinerator."
"Ah," he said. "You'll forgive me if I don't jump up and down thanking you for that."
Her lips twisted.
"Not going well, I guess."
Another dry laugh echoed around the monument.
"No,"
he said with a wry smile.
"Not going well."
"How bad is it?"
"Why do you care?"
"You're dead, but you're still a person,"
she said.
"That's how I see it anyway."
"For all the good it does me,"
he said.
"Sorry. I know you were trying to do me a favor."
The resident took off her glasses and held them out to him.
"Can you hold these for a second? I'd like to show you something."
Lawrence took the spectacles and she glanced around. With one quick motion, she tugged her shirt up around her neck, revealing a powder blue bra against flawless, milky skin. She tugged on the bottom of the cup to reveal a soft, pale curve of flesh and something dark. He took a breath without even thinking about it. Just below her right breast was a deep, ragged gash. It had been cleaned, but showed no signs of healing. The flesh around it was bruised and wrinkled. She let the bra settle back into place and pulled her shirt down. He looked up at her face, and she blinked out a blue contact, revealing the cloudy, gray eye underneath.
"I've been passing for 2 years,"
she said.
"It's not too hard in a hospital. Harsh lights, lots of topical antibiotics, eye drops, and no one questions if you smell like chemicals. Just have to be a bit careful no one sees too much of me in the locker room."
"Why? Why didn't you say anything?"
"People need a couple days to work through stuff, get their minds around what's happened."
She shrugged.
"If I'd told you then, you just would have outed me to the hospital staff."
"I would have."
He nodded.
"What happened to you?"
Her smile was the nicest thing he'd seen in days.
"It sounds stupid, but jogging accident."
He barked out another laugh.
"A what?"
"Here in the park, actually,"
she said, and pointed off past the bridge.
"I was running on one of the back trails,
I slipped on some loose dirt and fell on a broken branch.
You're joking.
She shook her head and tapped her chest.
Right through the lung. It collapsed, and it took me about 20 minutes to smother to death.
Sounds horrible.
It was. But I was lucky. It was a Tuesday night. If it had happened on a weekend, someone would have found me immediately, and that would have been that.
She shrugged.
As it was, I woke up dead the next morning and only missed one shift at the hospital. My supervisor docked me 2 days' pay to teach me a lesson.
And now you help any exes that come through?
No.
She smiled again.
I've been waiting for you.
Careful, I'm a married man.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
Apparently, the past 3 years have been great for the pool boy.
Ouch.
I'm starting to realize it's not that big a loss. So why were you waiting for me?
She leaned back and looked up at the sky.
We've had 4 17s come through our hospital since I made the transition,
she said.
2 put themselves down almost as soon as we released them. 1 went crazy and attacked a few people. And the last one got a lawyer and tried to get his house back from his bitch of a wife.
He chuckled and followed her gaze up to the stars.
I want to leave San Diego,
she said.
I want to head north and find somewhere better. A place where people like us can have a regular life.
She looked over at him.
I didn't want to go alone.
So, you've been waiting for me so we can go on a road trip together and find zombie paradise?
She laughed.
Well, when you put it like that...
I think that'd be nice.
Good.
He held out his arm.
What's your name, anyway? I'm Lawrence.
She hooked hers through his.
Promise not to laugh?
I promise to try.
I'm Eve.
Eve, he smiled. Of course you are.
They walked off together into the night, heading north.
Forged. Carica gasped in the bed and sat up. Her chestnut hair swung back and forth. Why would you ask such a thing of me? Jacob's dark eyes looked at her as he slid into his pants. The light from the fireplace danced across his broad chest and the tight beard that hugged his chin. She'd hung a Christmas stocking for him on the mantel. The sock was old and worn and second-hand. The same words described many things in the little apartment he kept for her. I didn't think it would scare you so, he said. It does not, she began. I am surprised. He nodded. It's not that difficult a thing, is it, my darling? Thoughts shifted in her mind. It is not, but... A shiver crept over her as she watched him pick up his shirt. You speak of old and powerful magics. How do you even know of such things? A man in my line of business hears things, he said with a shrug. She slid out of bed and stood naked behind him. That is not an answer. He admired her body in the mirror as he buttoned his shirt. What do you want me to say? I want the truth, Jacob, she said. Her nostrils flared, as they did when she became demanding or anxious. How do you know of such things? People from around the world come to my warehouses, he said, after a few moments of watching her breathe. They try to ingratiate themselves. They bring me gifts from their travels. They tell jokes they've heard. They tell stories from different parts of the world. Eastern Europe, for example. A breath caught in Carica's throat. He glanced about, searching for the cufflink that had popped off earlier in her rush to undress him. One man told me an amazing story about a little hamlet where 2 young lovers were crushed in a landslide a few years back. Hours left to live, but all each of them cared about was the other. They were so desperate to stay together forever. He spotted the cufflink by her foot and kneeled to sweep it up. She looked down at him. Her pulse jumped as he rose, his eyes and lips sweeping across her. They met, eye to eye. He was a bit short, she a little tall. He'd said it was one of the things he liked about her, that she was his equal. You remember the name of the town, don't you, my dear? She would always remember the little town. She would never forget it. I'd been hearing stories of what you could do for years, he continued. And then one day, there you were in front of me. His eyes swung low across her body, lingering as they did. A few minutes ago, her nudity had been luxurious and freeing. Now she felt exposed. His once appreciative gaze seemed colder, lecherous. Carica grabbed her threadbare dressing gown from the scattered clothes on the floor. She wrapped it clumsily around herself, avoiding his eyes. Has it always been about this? He paused in his dressing and gave her a nod. It has. From the very beginning? This was all you wanted? Jacob laughed. Maybe at first, but I admit there were other, shall we be polite and say, perks to our arrangement? She glared at him and pulled the gown even tighter at her throat. He clucked his tongue. Come now, my dear, he said, his fingers twisting at his cufflinks. I know you've enjoyed our little trysts, but I thought we'd been quite clear what this was. There never could have been anything serious between us. I'm a respected man of business throughout London. Half my client list is bankers and nobility. At best, you're a half-breed gypsy fortune-teller. The hot coals of the fireplace gleamed in her eyes. She blinked them away. They made her eyes water. I thought you... She glanced back at the wrinkled sheets, still warm and damp from their intimacy. Did you never love me? Not for a moment? Love? He scoffed. He fastened his collar and slid his braces up over his shoulders. Oh, Carica. What is love? A delusion. A game played by fools where there's never a clear winner. You know I'm more interested in clear, quantifiable gains. She opened her mouth, then bit back her reply. He shrugged his waistcoat into place. If it's about money, I can pay you, of course. Her nostrils flared again. No part of this, she said, was about being paid. Not for me, anyway. She turned from him and walked to the fireplace. Of course, he said to her back. Forgive my poor choice of words. His eyes searched the floor and found his boots half hidden beneath the rumpled bed. He cleared his throat with a pair of quick coughs. Of course, if it's too difficult for you. You have played games with my heart, Jacob, she snapped. Do not think to play with my mind as well. The man nodded and worked his toes into the first boot, then the second. He stood up and stomped his feet to settle them. So, will you do it? She stared into the fire. Why would you even want this? To have this done to you? He scoffed and poured a mouthful of wine into one of the glasses from earlier. Why? Do you have any concept of the power I'll have when I can look at the market in terms of years instead of weeks? Decades instead of months? I'll be unstoppable, a juggernaut of business and finance. A log collapsed into ash and embers, drawing his own eye to the fireplace. I'll be eternal, he said. He swallowed the wine, set the glass down hard on the small table. Eternal, Carica echoed. But without me. He shook his head and looked away from the flames. One way or another, he said, your part of this ends tonight, my dear. The only question is, does mine? Jacob walked back to the bed. His scarf and necktie both hung on the frame. He snapped the dust from them, draped the scarf over his arm, looped the tie around his collar. She tugged the little stocking loose and tossed it into the fireplace. A few steps took her to the mirror. Her grip on the gown relaxed, and she ran her fingers along the frame. Well? She wiped her eyes on the back of her dressing gown sleeve. Damn the day I let you steal away my heart, she said. Your words break it, but it is still yours to break. If this is your last wish from me, I am fool and mad enough to grant it. The corners of his mouth twitched. And I'll have eternal life. Not life, said Carica. Her fingers stretched out to trace slow, clumsy lines on the mirror. Afterlife. I can chain you to this world, so that the pull of the great hereafter cannot drag you away. You will continue on forever, bound here long after your body, this building, all of London, has fallen to dust. His grin was a wicked thing as he knotted his tie. One warning, my former dearest. If you ever once listened to me, listen now. Her fingers came back to her palms, rubbing away dust from the mirrored glass. Crossing over changes a man. How you see the world, and how you are seen. What drives you, what obsesses you now, may not seem as important from the other side. She raised her eyes to his. Such an enchantment as this is meant for much purer passions. If you picture me having a change of heart, he smirked, then your emotions truly did blind you to who I am. He shrugged his broad shoulders into his overcoat, brushing down the lapel. When can you do it? What do you need? Carica murmured a string of old words. Church Latin and University Greek and other syllables that resonated with history. Then she reached out and grabbed his hair. The kiss was fierce, wild, and final. She shoved him away just as he responded, drawing blood from his tongue with her teeth. A few strands of hair came away, too. She spat into her hand and rubbed the strands back and forth until they crumbled and vanished. It is done, my foolish man. What? Her hands wiped themselves clean on the stomach of her dressing gown, yanking it open and displaying her to him again. She made no move to close it. The most dangerous things in the world are often the simplest, she said. Her eyes burned hot and fierce, as they had months ago on the night they met. A pinch of dust, a lock of hair, a drop of blood. A few whispered words and symbols traced on a looking glass. You are now chained to this world, chained until all things end. He touched his arms, his chest, his face. I feel no different. And you shall not, until the day you die. Which will be decided by one greater than you and me. He smiled. Now leave, she said. The sight of you sickens me. She waved him away, the gown swirling around her like the robes of a penny dreadful high priestess. He opened the bedroom door and tipped his hat to her. A Merry Christmas to you, Carica. She glared over her shoulder at him. May God have mercy on your soul, Jacob Marley.
Contraption. It was an old building in a rundown part of Los Angeles, a brick hotel that had been converted into apartments. It was coated with layer upon layer of white paint that obscured details and discouraged people from thinking there was something dead in it.
Somebody noticed the smell a couple days ago, Detective Vaish said. Neighbors hadn't seen anyone in at least 2 months. Stevens is already upstairs with Getty.
Detective Clive Harper glanced past her to a car windshield covered with tickets and dust. And? She shrugged in a noncommittal way and held up her phone, searching for a signal.
Door was unlocked, but you've just got to see it.
What is it? Something about the body?
Like I just said,
You've got to see it.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I'm getting some air.
He raised an eyebrow. She glared at him.
Don't even. It's claustrophobic in there, jackass.
Harper smirked. He'd heard Vaish was a steel bitch, and she more than lived up to her reputation. She'd started out in homicide, switched over to robbery assault for a few years, then back 3 months ago. She'd put in the request right after Harper's predecessor, Tom Mulligan, a.k.a. Mulligan the Man, had vanished into thin air during an interrogation. He and the perp, some nut cosplaying a Komodo dragon or something, hadn't been seen since. Harper left her at the door and marched up three flights of stairs while he snapped on his gloves. A young uniform, Getty, held a navy sports coat and a flashlight at the end of the hall, looking through an open door to the right. Harper stepped past the door and thought he'd walked into a packed supply closet by mistake. Through the door was a near-solid wall of tubes and planks, pulleys and strings. A thick roulette wheel was mounted in the front of the mass above a collection of brass and copper pipes that looked like an organ. Just past them was a series of wooden gears, each the size of a frisbee, an array of stretched rubber bands, and what looked like a piston. He glanced at Getty. What the hell is this?
Clive? Asked the wall of clutter. Are you out there?
Harper peered into the depths and saw light wiggle.
Yeah. What are you doing in there, Ty?
Checking out the body. Hang on. I'll slide out so you can take a look.
The feet of Detective Tyler Stevens shuffled into view below the pipe organ, followed by his beefy legs and waist. The rest of him appeared holding a wallet in one latex-gloved hand.
William Webster, 42 years, Idaho license, and $23 in cash.
Harper nodded. Car out on the street with half a dozen tickets and a boot. It's got Idaho plates. He wrapped a pipe and it chimed like a bell.
What is all this stuff?
Beats me. But the whole damned apartment's full of it.
Stevens gestured at the crawl space.
Go about 6 feet in until this little tunnel forks and you can get up on your hands and knees. Right, then a sharp left. Lose your coat or you'll tear it.
On what?
About a dozen different things.
Harper shrugged out of his coat and wriggled into the mass. He dragged himself on his elbows, clenching his pocket maglite between his teeth and regretting the cheeseburger he'd had for lunch. To his left was an array of springs supporting a rack of 2x4s, each covered with blobs of candle wax. The right wall was a web of strings run back and forth through a dozen quarter-sized pulleys, each line vanishing into the depths of the collection. Tubes of copper and PVC ran over his head. He could smell old piss and decay and hear the buzz of flies. He worked his way around the corner and heaved himself up to crawl around the next one. He passed a small teeter-totter, a row of tall blocks set up like dominoes, the remains of at least 100 popped balloons, and what looked like a miniature trampoline the size of his splayed hand. Then the passageway through the gadgets widened, and he saw the body. It was surrounded by the dry outlines of puddles. The skin was coarse and papery, the stubbly cheeks hollow. Even before his body started to break down, William Webster had not been a big or hygienic man. His clothes were filthy and the detective could still smell weeks of body odor beneath the decay. There were only a dozen flies at most, which seemed odd.
"We get photos?" he called out.
"I got a bunch on my phone," Stevens said. "Still trying to figure out how to get the lab rats in there."
Harper grunted in agreement. One of the body's dead arms was stretched out, a finger extended towards something mounted on a plank of gray, dusty wood. It took Harper a moment to recognize the desk bell in the dim light, its button pointed off to the side. Mounted alongside it was an old hammer, its handle bolted to a hinge, the head held up by a thick pin that stretched into the jury-rigged mass. The mechanism was easy to spot. The pin retracted. The hammer swung and rang the bell. Something rattled behind him, followed by a long scraping noise. He heard a click and the sharp sound of rolling metal. Deep within the maze surrounding him, he saw something shift. The flies scattered, and a pair of roaches skittered out from under the body and vanished into the walls of junk.
"What was that?" he asked.
"Getty moved the roulette wheel, and something fell into one of the pipes,"
Stevens said. His words carried the unmistakable tone of time to slap the rookie.
"Something?"
"I think it was a golf ball," said Getty.
The harsh clack, clack, clack of wooden gears echoed through the apparatus, followed by the squeal of an oily hinge.
"I'm coming out."
Harper shifted his weight, shimmied backwards, and his pants leg caught on a prong. He tried to kick free, but the twill was durable. Near his head, a rusty bicycle chain began to grind around a toothy wheel.
"What's going on in there?"
"I'm stuck," said Harper. "Hang on."
Something went thump off to the side, far enough in he couldn't see it, heavy enough to make the whole contraption shudder around him. Harper pulled his knee up to his chest and his pants leg slipped off whatever held it. He twisted around the corner and hit his ass where the tunnel's ceiling lowered. His belly slapped the floor as he pushed back with his arms. Another set of loud clacks came from deeper in the room, like wooden blocks slapping together. He heard a snap, and a whiff of sulfur brushed his nose. Hands closed on his ankles, and he was dragged back into the bright hallway. Something clanged like a gong back in the tight passage, and then there was silence. Stevens pulled him to his feet.
"You okay?"
Harper shook himself out.
"Almost wet my pants for a second there, but I think so." He shot a look at Getty. "I know you're really excited at being your first day in uniform and all, but in the future, let's not touch the crime scene if we don't need to, okay?"
"Sorry, sir.
No harm, no foul. Show me what you did."
The young officer pointed at the wheel.
"I just moved it back and forth a couple times, not even a quarter turn. I felt a little vibration, like something rolling, and then the ball dropped out into..."
He paused and studied the organ-like array of pipes.
"This one. It fell in here."
The detective crouched down, studying the underside of the wheel.
"You sure?"
"Yes, sir."
Stevens reached out to prod one of the large wooden gears.
"Shit. You know what all this crap reminds me of? Did you ever play that game Mousetrap when you were a kid?"
"The one with the crazy machine that ran off a marble?"
Harper nodded.
"I don't think I ever actually played it, but I built the thing a couple dozen times."
"Yeah. It was like one of those crazy drawings by what's-his-name?"
"Rube Goldberg," said Getty. He shrugged at their gaze. "I'm dating an art student."
Harper nodded and studied the pipes beneath the roulette wheel.
"The Goldberg machines always did something, though, you know? They'd have 50 steps to crack an egg or light a cigar or something. What does all this stuff do?"
Stevens smirked as he peered back into the mass.
"William Webster might say it's a mouse trap."
Vaish appeared at the end of the hallway brandishing her cell phone before she dropped it into her pocket.
"I got hold of the manager."
"Let's hear it," said Harper.
"Webster isn't the tenant. There hasn't been a new tenant in this apartment in almost a decade. Lease has been in the name of Atticus G. Young the whole time."
"Atticus?"
"Talk to his parents. Manager's been with the company for 9 years now, never met him. Rent gets paid by bank checks mailed by a service. Never any complaints or issues, so he didn't go looking. He just figured it was some sort of weekend place Young kept for affairs or something."
9 years? Echoed Stevens. "No one ever sprayed for roaches or did an inspection or anything?"
She shrugged.
"Doesn't look like it."
Harper looked at the wall of pipes and gears.
"So this has all been sitting here for years?"
Vaish nodded.
"Maybe longer. That's when the building was bought by some investment firm. Manager doesn't have any records from before that."
"You put a call into the bank about Young?" asked Harper.
"Already on it. That's not the weird part, though."
"Okay."
"Well, I talked to some of the other tenants on my way back up here. None of them has heard of Young either, but they say there's always someone new in this apartment. They think it's haunted or something because no one ever stays there longer than 2 or 3 months. They hang around for a while, and then they just vanish. According to the old lady down the hall, Webster'd been living here for at least 2 months. She remembers him because he beat the average."
"You get full statements yet?"
"Nope. Thought you'd want to hear it first."
Harper nodded.
"Good.
Get another unit here. I want statements from everyone in the building, descriptions of anyone they can remember staying here.
Maybe get a sketch artist down here, too.
On it,
she nodded.
Okay, then, said Stevens. Let's see what there is to know about our man. William Webster.
Stevens dropped the file on the line between their desks.
Life and times of.
Morning to you, too. Harper flipped open the folder and glanced at the picture. Anything interesting?
Not much. Sold menswear back in Idaho. Graduated community college in 2006. Associate degree. Some credit card debt, but nothing huge. No priors, no immediate family, only a few friends. 5 months ago, he quit his job, announced he was moving to Los Angeles, never seen or heard from again. Anything on Atticus Young?
I've got Vaish on it. She's taking the Detective 2 exam next month. She can use the legwork. What about the big thingamajig in the apartment?
Stephen shrugged and dropped the second file.
We've got about 100 photos of it. A few of the parts go back 40 or 50 years, easy. Some of it can't be more than a couple years old. I was back there for a bit this morning trying to make some kind of sense out of it.
Harper thumbed through the photos. You think it's some sort of OCD thing? Like those people who collect 30 years' worth of newspapers or never throw their trash out or something?
Stevens shook his head.
It's too complex not to be planned out on some level. It has to be deliberate.
What makes you say that?
Well, okay. Take the roulette wheel.
He flipped through the pictures and pointed at an image of the thick green and red disc.
I pried the top off it, and there's a whole maze inside.
Harper blinked.
What?
Yeah. You have to put a ball in the right hole on top, then move the wheel back and forth in the right pattern to get it to the correct hole on the bottom.
He traced a path across the photograph with his finger.
Think of it like a big combination lock rather than a maze. You turn it left to 6, right to 5, that sort of thing. It comes out the wrong hole, that means it goes in the wrong pipe. Wrong pipe means a dead end.
Dead end?
Yeah. It's a big puzzle, complete with false leads that don't go anywhere, like separate machines that aren't part of the main one.
He pushed a few photos aside and revealed one showing the body's white outline.
Stupid as it sounds, I think the whole point of the thing is to make it ring the bell.
Harper looked at the image of the hammer assembly and the desk bell.
That's it? It's just a damned game?
Stevens shrugged.
I can't think of anything else it's supposed to do. But I'll make you a bet.
Yeah?
He tapped one of the photos, an image of the elaborate pipe organ array.
Don't ask me why, but I've got a hunch this thing is why he came to Los Angeles.
Vaish stepped into the bullpen and set her eyes on the desk she wanted. Harper glanced up at her.
Hey. Hey, Detective, just you today? Stevens had an idea he wanted to check out at the crime scene. What have you got for me?
She hooked her thumbs on her wide police belt.
I talked to the bank about that Young account. Guess what?
Thrill me.
It isn't a bank account. It's a blind trust. It's been mailing out rent checks every month back to 1954, possibly longer. The bank doesn't have all their records digitized, but they say the trust's been in place since 1923.
Great. Who set it up?
Working on that. We might need a warrant. Want to guess what year the building went up, though?
No kidding.
No kidding.
Jesus.
She nodded.
Something else. I thought it was weird that Webster starved to death with 20-odd bucks in his wallet and a 7-Eleven half a block away. So I called his bank and got a list of his recent ATM and credit card purchases.
Smart move. And?
He spent almost $300 at stores within 5 blocks of the apartment building. Candles, matches, rubber bands, all sorts of crap. Last receipt was just over 3 months ago.
Harper tapped his right fingertips on his left knuckles and nodded.
Crap like that whole gadget is made of.
Maybe he built it after all.
Vaish shook her head.
No, I don't think he was buying stuff to build it. He was buying stuff to reload it with.
Sorry, what?
All those big overcomplicated machines, you look at the pictures, and they can only really work once. That's part of the joke. Then you have to go through and reset levers, replace strings, and,
she held up the bank report,
put in fresh candles.
Stevens studied the sketch of the maze in his notepad. The combination lock wasn't a bad analogy. He held up the roulette face and made notes of the numbers and directions. If there was a pattern or purpose to them, he couldn't see it. He reassembled the wheel without too much trouble and pulled out one of the several golf balls the victim had left scattered everywhere. The ball vanished into hole 13. Studying his diagram, he spun the wheel slowly to 6 and felt a faint click as the ball hit a wall. The detective glanced at his notebook, then shifted the disc back to 5. Another click from the unseen golf ball. Clockwise again to 18, almost a full circle around to 25, then 15, followed by a slight adjustment to 16. The golf ball went into the 7th pipe from the left on the bundle of brass tubes, and Stevens slid into the crawl space trying to keep up. It rolled down a ramp and hit a simple lever. That knocked a ratty baseball into a small hanging basket. The basket sank, and far above him he heard the clack of a counterweight falling. A set of gears began to turn, and a wooden slat swung out to brush a leather boot sole that was mounted on the wall. The crude arm came to rest above a half-melted candle. He peered up through the array of boards and lines and tubes. At the end of the slat was a withered match in a wire clip. If it had been fresh, it would have ignited on the boot and lit the candle. He made another note.
What the hell was he doing with this thing?
I got the medical examiner's report for you.
You know you still have to pass the exam, Harper told Vaish. You can kiss ass all you want. It won't matter.
I will once I've passed the exam.
Harper flipped through the pages and diagrams. Dead for 13 to 14 weeks when we found him. Starvation, extreme dehydration, like we thought. Vaish nodded slowly.
You think he got trapped in there? Or locked in?
I don't know yet. He frowned as he read a circled section. 2/3 of his teeth are chipped or cracked, mostly the molars. His tongue is covered with cuts, and he's got particle fragments all through his stomach and intestines.
What kind of particles?
Emmy is testing them to be sure, but he thinks it's bone and tooth enamel. He was swallowing his own broken teeth.
Okay. That's disgusting.
Welcome back to Homicide.
Got him,
Vaish said with a grin. Harper looked up from the photographs.
Who?
She held up a printout.
I thought the trust fund starting at the same time as the building was weird, so I checked some old construction permits and business licenses. There was an A.G. Young on the board of directors for the firm that built that place, and about 3 years afterward, all the other board members banded together and threw him out.
Why?
No idea. But reading between the lines, they were damned sure they wanted him gone.
Harper spun a pen between his fingers.
Okay, so it's possible this thing's been in there all this time.
Let's say Webster knew it was here somehow. He heard about it online or something, and he came to Los Angeles to find it.
Let's say lots of people have. The other tenants say there's people there all the time. We've got descriptions of almost a dozen in the past 3 years.
Harper jotted down a note.
So, somehow, people find out about this thing, this big contraption that fills a whole room and does something.
We need to find out how they learn about it.
Okay.
Then they get here, they start playing with it, and at some point, that's all they're doing, just sitting in there trying to figure the thing out. Her lips twisted.
It's just a big puzzle, though. How obsessed could someone get with it?
When I was in college, Harper said, I knew this one girl who almost failed out. She didn't go to classes for a month, just sat at her desk playing some game and ran down to the dining commons now and then.
Yeah, but that's hardly the same.
I think it's exactly the same. Vaish shook her head.
If they're all getting that obsessed, if some of them are actually starving to death, trying to figure this thing out, why haven't we heard of it before? I mean, if we just figure 2 or 3 people find this thing a year, that's almost 300 people dead since the building went up. Why aren't there other bodies?
Maybe the other one solved it? Maybe Webster's the fluke? Only guy in 100 years to fail the test?
I'm glad you said that, not me. It sounds really weak.
Yeah, sorry. Harper grabbed his mug and wandered across the bullpen to the coffee counter. Vaish followed him over and glanced at the snack machine while he refilled his mug. He drummed his fingers in front of the coffee maker. Stevens thinks this thing is deliberate. Planned out. I'm starting to agree with him. Sort of.
Sort of?
Harper mixed in a sugar packet.
I think it's designed to make you obsessed with it. What's that supposed to mean?
He sipped the coffee.
Did you ever find a puzzle that just stopped you dead?
She smoothed out a dollar and fed it to the vending machine. It spit the bill back out at her.
Is this part of the level 2 exam?
Sort of.
Yeah. I can remember getting some brain teasers when I was in school that just never made sense.
And then they got explained and you realized how to look at it, how you needed to think to solve them, right?
Right. So?
It's made to make you think differently. But not just in how you look at the puzzle. In order to solve this contraption, to figure out the logic behind it, people reprogram their brains. The machine accepted her dollar and she stabbed two of the buttons.
Can you do that?
People do it all the time. That's how they become fluent in languages or build reflexes. They train their minds to work differently.
Yeah, but that takes years of actively trying to build new thought patterns.
Not always. That's why they have those immersion classes where people can learn languages in months. I think I even read somewhere that's what mandalas are for when you meditate. Studying the pattern helps to shape your thought patterns.
So you're saying something about the way this thing is built makes people obsessed with it?
She tore open a package of mini donuts.
Maybe.
He had another drink of coffee. You know you shouldn't eat that stuff, right?
What? You say something about my girlish figure, I'll knock you flat.
I'm just saying, it's a bad habit to eat that crap for lunch when you can walk 2 blocks and get...
What?
Harper's face went white.
Oh, fuck.
She blinked.
What? What is it?
You're busy working on something, so busy with it you won't go and get real food, so what do? Vase shrugged.
You eat whatever's convenient, even if it's just...
She looked at the donuts and felt her stomach twist.
They aren't his teeth. No.
She shook her head.
No, nothing makes you that obsessed.
He was in that room for weeks. Months. Like the person before him, and the person before that. That's why there aren't any other bodies.
Oh, Jesus.
She threw the package of donuts in the trash. He ran a hand through his hair. We've got to run DNA tests on those fragments, cross them with missing persons, and go over that place for any hairs, anything we can...
Clive?
He blinked. It was the first time he could ever remember Vaish calling him by his first name.
Yeah? When was the last time you saw Detective Stevens?
Ball in hole 13, 6-5, 18, 25, 15, 16. Seventh pipe drops, rolls, lever, baseball. Baseball lands in basket. Basket pulls string, string releases lever. Starts gear spinning. Arm swings, strikes match on boot. Lights candle. Gears turn candle under glove. Glove swells, knocks roller skate. Skate goes down track. Hits trip line. Trip line releases clothespins. Clothespins slide down wire to scales. Scales drop, hit switch for desk fan. Fan blows toy sail boat down rain gutter. Boat pokes marble. Marble rolls into funnel onto rails. Down, down, down.
This has been an Audible original publishing production of Dead Men Can't Complain and Other Stories. Written by Peter Kleins. Performed by Ray Porter and Ralph Lister. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik. Producer, Kat Lambrix. Copyright 2017 by Peter Kleins. Production copyright 2017 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.